the echo of Leonardo da Vinci remembers. A boy kneels before a cave in the Tuscan hills. Darkness breathes out, and he learns that not knowing is reason enough to enter.
The stone was cold under my knees, even in summer. I crouched at the mouth where the hillside had broken open. Darkness breathed out at me, cool and damp and deep. My heart beat so hard I could feel it in my throat. Behind me, sunlight made everything bright and safe. In front of me, nothing. Just black. I could not see what waited inside. That was exactly why I could not leave. Uncle Francesco had gone back down the path. "I'll wait by the big rock," he'd said. "Don't go inside." His voice had been strange when he said it. Not angry. Something else. Something I didn't have a word for. The cool air kept coming out of the darkness. It touched my face, my neck, like invisible fingers brushing against me. The villagers said spirits lived in caves, the old ones, the ones from before. They said the mountain breathed through these holes, and if you went inside, you might not come out the same. But if the mountain wasn't alive, how could it breathe? I had asked Uncle Francesco that question on the way up here. He hadn't answered. The morning had started with birds. "Uncle, why do they go round and round before rain?" I asked as we walked. Uncle Francesco was ahead of me on the path that wound up Montalbano. He had a sack over his shoulder. We were going to check the upper olive grove. "They feel it coming," he said. "Birds know weather. The old ones always said so." "But how do they feel it? I don't feel anything." "You're not a bird. But their eyes are like my eyes. Their wings are like arms, sort of." I flapped to show him. "Why can they feel it and I can't?" Francesco laughed. It was a kind laugh, not mean. "Maybe they pay better attention than you do, little one." I thought about this. It wasn't a real answer. But it wasn't wrong either. A little while later, I found a beetle on the path. It was dead, crushed by a boot or a hoof. But I crouched down to look anyway. It had a hard back, black and shiny, with tiny lines running across it. Underneath, its legs were folded up like fingers. "Zio, look." I picked it up carefully. "Why does it have its hard part on the outside? We have our hard parts inside, our bones." Francesco didn't stop walking. "God made beetles one way and people another way. Come on, we have work." "But why that way? Why not the same?" "Leonardo." His voice meant no more questions. I put the beetle in my pocket anyway. I would look at it more later. The path crossed the mill stream where the water came down off the mountain. I stopped on the big rock in the middle, the one we always stepped on. "Uncle, why does it turn here?" "What?" "The stream. It curves around this rock. Why doesn't it go straight?" Francesco looked at me like I had said something strange. "Water goes where it wants to go. But water isn't alive. It doesn't want things." He didn't answer. He was already across, waiting on the other bank. "Water always finds the low way." That much I understood. I stayed on the rock a moment longer. Where the water went around a stone, it made a little eddy turning back on itself. Like the birds before rain. Like something I couldn't name. I watched the water curl over and over, always the same and always different. Then I jumped across and followed my uncle up the hill. Near the top, Francesco stopped to rest under an old fig tree. I picked up a fallen fruit from the ground, too ripe, already splitting, and pulled it apart. Inside were hundreds of tiny seeds, each one in its own little place, all arranged in tight spirals that got smaller toward the center. "Zio, how do the seeds know where to go?" Francesco was drinking from his water skin. He lowered it and looked at me. What do you think, little philosopher? I turned the fig in my hands, studying the spiral. Maybe. They don't know. Maybe something makes them grow that way, like the water makes the stream curve. God put them in order, he said. That's what God does. I looked at the spiral of seeds inside the fig. God was a good answer for some questions, but it didn't tell me how. How did God make them go in that pattern? Why circles? Why not rows? I didn't ask this out loud. I had learned that some questions made adults' faces go tight. There's a cave up here, Francesco said, as we started walking again. Stay away from it. A cave? Where? I looked at the rocky outcrop above us where the pale rock jutted out of the hillside like broken bones. Up past the grove, the old ones. He stopped, made a sign against evil with his hand. Don't go near it. Why? People say spirits live there. The mountain breathes through it. In and out, like a living thing. He wasn't looking at me now. Anyone who goes inside might change. I thought about the water going around the stone, the beetles with their hard parts on the outside, the seeds arranging themselves in circles, the birds that feel weather. Everything had some reason that nobody could explain. Zio? What now? If the mountain isn't alive, how does it breathe? Francesco stopped walking. He turned and looked at me. His face went strange. Not angry, not scared, but something between. He didn't answer. He showed me where the cave was. Maybe he thought that would be enough, that seeing the dark hole in the mountain would make me not want to go near it. Maybe it worked for other boys, but I was not other boys. And now I was here, kneeling at the edge of darkness. The sun was hot on my back. Flies buzzed somewhere in the dry grass. A bird called out from the olive grove below. Normal sounds, safe sounds. But in front of me, the darkness made no sound at all. No, that wasn't right. The cave breathed. I could feel the air coming out, cool against the summer heat. My uncle said the mountain breathed. The villagers said spirits lived inside. But air isn't breath. Air doesn't need lungs. I leaned closer. I could see a little bit now, stone walls curving back, going down. The floor was pale rock, worn smooth by something. How deep did it go? What was at the end? My hands gripped the edge of the opening. The stone was rough under my fingers, warm from the sun on top, cool underneath where the cave air touched it. Spirits, the villagers said. Don't go inside, my uncle said. What's in there? My mind asked over and over. My stomach was tight. My legs wanted to run. My heart beat so hard I could feel it in my ears. But I did not run. I don't know which part of me decided. My legs, maybe. My hands. Not my head. My head was still scared, still saying, go back, go back, go back. But then I was inside. The darkness was all around me now. Not empty, full. Full of something I couldn't see. The sounds from outside, the flies, the birds, went away. Here there was only the drip of water somewhere far in and the noise of my own breath, too loud. I pressed my back against the cave wall. The stone was wet and cold. I couldn't see anything. My eyes needed light, and there wasn't enough. I waited. I closed my eyes and counted to 10. I opened them and looked, closed them again, opened. Each time the darkness gave me a little more, a shape, a line, the glint of water. What I couldn't see became what I could see by waiting, by looking, by trying again. The walls curved back and down. The floor sloped into deeper black. And there, rising from the floor like pale towers, stone shapes built by nothing but water and time. In a hollow place beyond them, water. a tiny pool catching what little light came from the entrance behind me. No spirits, no monsters, no old ones waiting in the dark. Just stone and water and silence and cold air. I crouched down and put my hand in the water. It was cold, colder than the stream, colder than the well, colder than anything I had ever touched. Somewhere deeper in the earth, the cave went on, and the cool air came from there. The mountain's breath. But not breath. Just cool air flowing out from the deep earth toward the warmth, the way water moves from high to low. The villagers thought spirits lived here because they had never looked. They stood at the edge and turned away, and their fear filled the dark with monsters. But I had looked, and the dark had shown me what it was. I did not know things without looking. That was the difference. When I came out, the light had changed. The sun was lower, the shadows longer. I had been inside for a long time. Uncle Francesco was sitting on the big rock down the path, where he said he would wait. When he saw me, his face did a lot of things at once. Relief and worry and surprise. Leonardo, he stood up. You went inside?
Yes.
You were told not to?
I know.
He walked toward me. I thought he might be angry, but when he got close, he just looked at me for a long moment. Then he reached out and picked a bit of stone dust from my hair.
What was inside?
He asked quietly.
Stone. Water. Cold air.
I paused.
No spirits.
How do you know there are no spirits?
I looked.
He didn't say anything to that. We started walking down the path together. The olive grove was full of shadows now. Somewhere far off, a night bird was beginning to call.
Uncle Francesco.
What? Why is the water in the cave so cold?
He sighed, but it was a good sigh. I don't know. I want to find out.
Of course you do. He shook his head.
You're too much like your father, Ser Piero.
We walked the rest of the way in silence. I put my hand in my pocket, and the beetle was still there, its hard back smooth under my fingers. Tomorrow I would look at it more closely. I would see how the shell fit together, how the legs folded, what was inside. And there were other things. The water curling around the stone, the seeds spiraling in the fig, the cave going down into the mountain, the birds knowing weather before I could feel it. So many things to look at. My heart was beating fast again, not scared fast like in the cave. Different. Like how I feel when grandmother says there's honey cakes after supper. Like being hungry for something that isn't food. Above us, the first stars were coming out. More things I didn't know yet. More questions nobody had answered. That was all right. Tomorrow I would ask again.
The echo fades. But this was only the beginning. The other 11 chapters of this story are waiting at Agora Cosmica, a living library you can talk to. At agoracosmica.org, you can hear the whole series, talk with their echoes yourself, and discover the facts behind them. We're a small nonprofit. We use synthetic narration so these stories can stay free, without ads, and reach you in more than one language. If this stayed with you, tell someone, and a rating helps others find it.